Here is our title for today up on the screen. Why are we failing to save the planet? Climate change, extinction and Christianity. Well, we've watched a video clip of David Attenborough speaking on the recent BBC documentary called Climate Change, The Facts. We've seen him introduce a series of scientists and experts and professionals spelling out just how serious this problem has become and how little time there is to put things right. You may well recognise Greta Thunberg. Here she is protesting with a banner written in Swedish about climate change. And she sparked really a global movement now of school children and teenagers and other protesters. We've been reading about them in the news almost every day, certainly every week. In a recent speech, Greta Thunberg said, "Yes, we are failing. Yes, we are failing. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day. Then I want you to act as you would in a crisis, as if the house was on fire, because it is." Well, it's sad that some people have been very unkind about her and about other teenagers on social media. Most people have been more positive and grateful for a fresh, young perspective, perhaps feeling that teenagers speaking about these things, well, they can be accused of looking at things in an oversimplified way, but perhaps that's what we need at the moment, to look at things in a direct way, without so many of the complications we bring as adults. You might just call them excuses. But there will be lots of different reactions in this room to these concerns about climate change. And I wonder what your reaction is. Are you afraid? Perhaps very afraid. Perhaps very anxious and troubled about these things and about the future. Are you more optimistic? Are you hopeful? Do you feel it's likely that we will get our act together and there will be positive changes that are made in time to make a difference? Are you resigned to it, feeling that nothing will change? That there is no point putting these things right, that it just won't happen? Are you complacent, perhaps? Some may be dubious, cynical, wondering if their facts have been distorted or exaggerated, or if there are ulterior motives or ideologies at work behind all of this. But whatever your reaction, whatever my reaction, what I've promised today is a Christian perspective on the issue of climate change. That's the title, Climate Change, Extinction and Christianity. Now, if we're going to have a genuinely Christian perspective, it can't just be my own personal opinion or yours. It can't just be one group of people who claim to represent Christianity. We're going to need to look at Jesus himself, at the Christ in Christianity, and to look at the Bible, at the authentic voice of Christianity, right from the original source. And as we look at the core Christian message, we do find help with this question. You could summarise the story of the Bible. It's often summarised in three very simple words, three key stages in the story of the Bible. The words creation, sin, Jesus. Creation, sin, Jesus. Each of those helps to answer our question, why are we failing to save the planet? So we're going to look at each of those in turn. And answer the question from those basics of the Bible. And the first that we're going to look at is creation. How does creation answer that question? Why are we failing to save the planet? Well, creation tells us we've forgotten our accountability. We've forgotten our accountability. That's the first of our three responses. In other words, we've moved away from the idea that this planet belongs to God, that he made it, and that we're accountable to him for how well we look after it. So let's look at each of them in turn for the next short time. Firstly, creation. Why are we failing to save the planet? Well, we've forgotten our accountability. We've forgotten our accountability. We've moved away from the idea that this planet belongs to God, that he made it, and therefore we are accountable to him for how well we look after it and what we do with it. So we listen to that wonderful psalm, Psalm 104. There's some words from it. "How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures."
Psalm 144, verse 24. As it was read earlier, perhaps you noticed it read a bit like a nature documentary, a celebration of the wonders and beauty of the natural world around us, the nesting stork, the wild goats on high mountain crags, the vast and spacious seas teeming with creatures, the beasts prowling in the forest at night. And the big emphasis of that whole poem, that whole song, is that God takes the credit for all of that. It's all from him, from his creativity, his imagination, and his power. And if that is true, I appreciate there'll be some who believe that and plenty of people who don't believe that. But if it is true, if all the world belongs to God and we belong to God as well, then our role is to take care of creation under his authority, to look after it on his behalf. We're to do it his way. We're God's stewards, his gamekeepers, his gardeners, his deputies. And the Bible makes that very clear. Just for one example of that, Genesis 2 verse 15, at the very beginning of the Bible, we're told the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. From the very beginning, men and women are given that role, that responsibility over nature. Yes, we have a rule, a dominion is the word the Bible uses, but we exercise that under God's greater authority. It's to reflect his ways and to be accountable to him, and therefore we are to take great care. So, for example, Proverbs 27 in the Bible tells us that a wise person takes care of their animals, not just of themselves, other people, but animals as well. Or Deuteronomy 22 tells us that we shouldn't, even in a war, that we shouldn't be cutting down trees, that we should be preserving them. And that, I think, is the key. Sorry, I'll come back to that. The key is that we've forgotten our accountability. If someone goes on holiday and they ask you to look after their house for them, you look after it with care and respect, I imagine. You feel a bit of sort of extra responsibility. You're probably even more careful looking after their home than you are looking after your own home. You water their plants. You'd feel very bad if your friend got back from holiday and all their plants were dead. If their plants are going to die, that's fine, but not while you're responsible. Their hamster, you know, you've got a hamster now, you're really nervous, because hamsters die very quickly all the time. But, you know, you're really going to pay a lot of attention. That hamster's going to be better treated during those 2 weeks of holiday than the rest of its life, because you don't want it to be in your watch that it all goes wrong. And maybe you're not quite so careful in your own home. Maybe the goldfish sometimes don't get fed for a while, and the tank sometimes doesn't get cleaned out. Maybe you get mud on your carpet. Maybe you can't always be bothered to tidy up your bedroom. But in their house, you don't want to leave it in a mess. You look after it in a much more careful way. And we have lost sight of the idea that this world belongs to God, and we are looking after it for him. He's entrusted us with that responsibility to do it the way he would want it done himself, to the best of our ability. Now many people and many parts of the world have moved away from that to what is known as a materialist philosophy or point of view. A materialist says, look, there's probably no God or no spirituality, or if there is, it's probably not very important. And what really matters is, all that really matters is the material world, the physical world, the things that we own and touch and possess. And it shouldn't surprise us that that way of thinking, materialist philosophy, will lead to a materialist lifestyle. And that's what we see around us. If this world is all that we have, and this life is all that we have, and there's no accountability and no one telling us what to do, no higher power, then we just make the most of what we've got, and we use it and we consume it. And we grab it while we can because we haven't got it for long, and we take and use and abuse as much as we can, as quickly as we can. Very different story in the Bible. The Bible says we're not here forever, only a short time, and we're not going to take anything with us when we go to meet God, to the next life. So be content with what you need. Be content with food and clothing, and if you have that, you have what you need. A very different approach to the world. And so a society based on materialism will not really be one that looks after the planet in the right way. You probably know, this is the Aral Sea at the top left. You can see it in 1977. It was roughly the size of Ireland at that point. And then gradually it shrinks down until by the bottom right, 90% of it has gone. The water diverted for other purposes and polluted for farms, for industry, for weapon testing. All of this has happened in the former Soviet Union, a society that is based on communal materialism. That's the dominant philosophy there. And it would be true whether in the communist East or in the capitalist West. The problem is the same. We live as if all we have is this material world, and as if we're not accountable to anyone above us or over us. Some supporters of the concern for the environment and climate change have reacted against that and gone to a totally different extreme and said, look, instead of saying there's no such thing as spiritual or divine, let's say that everything is spiritual and divine. Let's say that the whole planet, that Mother Nature is almost a spiritual ecosystem. And let's try to withdraw ourselves from that as if we were sort of a cancer that has overgrown. But there is a danger there that we will just abdicate. Yes, we'll go back to a simpler way of life, perhaps, from hundreds or thousands of years ago. But we won't own up to our responsibility. It's what the Bible wants us to do, to say, look, you're responsible, you fix this, you're accountable to me, you're in charge of this, learn about the world I've given you, look after it, figure out what is needed, and take your responsibility seriously. Not just abdicate, not abuse it, as if it's all we have, not abdicate, as if it can take care of itself better without us, but take your responsibility seriously and look after it. So that's the first answer from the Bible. Why are we failing to save the planet? Well, firstly, because we've forgotten our accountability to the Creator. And secondly, that word sin also helps to answer this question. Why are we failing to save the planet? Well, because we've underestimated our problem. We focused on the wrong behaviour that causes the damage to the environment, and we've not seen that there is an underlying cause behind wrong behaviour. It is it's not just what we do, it's who we are and what we want. It's the selfishness in our human hearts, and that in itself comes from a fundamental rejection of God and disobedience of God. Maybe you know those early chapters of the Bible. We've seen already humanity is placed in a paradise garden and told, look after it, take care of it. But immediately, human beings reject God and declare independence and say, look, we can do this without God. We'll just do this selfishly in our own way. And God says to them and to us, cursed is the ground because of you. It's Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. Cursed is the ground because of you. It sort of makes sense, doesn't it? That if we're responsible for nature as human beings, if we're the gardeners or the gamekeepers, the stewards, and our relationship with God is broken and damaged, and we're separated from God, then the consequences of that won't only affect us, the consequences of that will also affect the world around us, the nature, the creation that we've been given charge of. And later on in the Bible, the prophet Hosea unpacks that. Here are some words from Hosea chapter 4. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, and murder, stealing and adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Because of this, the land dries up, and all who live in it waste away. The beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are swept away. Do you see the logic of that? The problem begins with our attitude to God, our relationship with God. There's no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. That's the root underlying cause of our problems according to the Bible, according to these prophets. And that is expressed in the way we treat other people. There's only cursing, lying and murder, stealing and adultery. They break all bounds and bloodshed follows bloodshed. But the consequences of that also affect nature and the land. Because of this, because of this. Therefore, in response to all of these problems, the land dries up, all who live in it waste away, the beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are swept away. It's a pattern that we still see happening today. This is the Exxon Valdez oil tanker, which ran aground on a reef near Alaska in 1989, causing one of the worst environmental disasters that we've seen. 11.2 million gallons of oil were spilled into the sea. 750 kilometers of coastline was ruined for a long period of time. 250,000 seabirds were estimated to have been killed by it, no doubt countless fish and other damage that can't be measured. And an inquiry afterwards tried to figure out what was the cause of this. Why did this happen? And there were a series of causes. The shipping company had dropped safety standards to increase profits. The government regulator had relaxed the rules to increase tax income. The ship's captain apparently had for many years had a habit of being drunk in charge of a ship. No one knows whether he was on this occasion or not. And a survey was done of the general public to discover how much were they prepared to spend to avoid this sort of thing happening again. And the answer was on average, it was 32 times less than they already spent on oil-based products on a regular basis. So why are we failing to save the planet? Well, is it the politicians? Well, yes. But they will only do and can only do what people are prepared to support when they vote in elections. Is it big business? Well, yes, but they will only do and can only do what people are prepared to pay for as consumers. So in the end, however you look at it, the problem is us. Ordinary people like us. It is our fault. It's your fault. It's my fault. And the root cause of the problem is deep in the human heart, a self-centered, short-term attitude. What can I get out of this now for me? And that, the Bible tells us, comes from the problem we all have, which is that humanity has broken its relationship with God and no longer loves and serves him. So, of course, we are right to try and change laws and regulations and protest and raise awareness, but in the end, none of these things can really deal with the underlying cause and the underlying problem. They can help, perhaps, with the symptoms, but they can't cure the disease. They are superficial answers to a very deep problem. We've underestimated our problem. We've forgotten our accountability, and then sin, we've underestimated our problem. And finally, Jesus. Why are we failing to save the planet? Well, because we've overlooked our Saviour. We've not realised that Jesus is the one who saves us and our planet, and that in the end he's the only one able to do that. Let's have a look at some words. Jesus speaks about salvation a great deal when he came into the world, and commissions his followers to explain all of that, and they do that in the later parts of the Bible. Here's one of the explanations they give. It's talking here about Jesus, that's him, Jesus, through him, to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Notice that language of reconcile and peace. There's a war going on between human beings and God. Who is in charge of our lives and our world? We want to be in charge, so we're fighting God for control. And what we need above all is to be reconciled. And here we're told that the big moment in history was the moment when Jesus died on a cross in the first century. Because at that moment, this was God reconciling humanity to himself, restoring the relationship, the damaged relationship between human beings and God, dying in our place. We deserve God's punishment. We deserve justice. We deserve God's anger. But Jesus says, look, I'm going to take that punishment in your place. I'm going to die and suffer God's anger instead of you. And the outcome of that will be that you can be reconciled, restored in your relationship with God. You can be forgiven. But just notice that the way this is described is not just about human beings. It talks there about reconciling to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven. A bit later on in this paragraph, it talks about this being good news for every creature. Because if human beings are in charge of the planet and responsible for it in creation, and if our rejection of God has damaged not just us, but our planet that we're responsible for, then the solution to that problem through Jesus will restore and reconcile not just us, but also the planet that we're responsible for. And so you get to the very end of the Bible and you get this wonderful vision of what Jesus has achieved by dying for humanity on the cross. And you find that it is both bad news and good news. As you get to the end of the Bible, Revelation is the last book. We had a reading from it earlier. The time has come for judging the dead and for destroying those who destroy the earth. That's the bad news. We're accountable. That's you and me, isn't it? We destroy the earth. One of the many ways in which we disobey God is to destroy the planet. And we face God at the end of history, at the end of our lives. We get what we deserve. If we've done the destroying, then we find ourselves destroyed. But Jesus died so that that need not be the outcome for us. He died so that through him we can be forgiven and restored. And this doesn't need to be the end of the story. And so you get to the very end of the book of Revelation. And Jesus is described in charge of a wonderful new heavens, a new earth, a new creation, a fruitful, perfect paradise restored. And Jesus says from the throne, I am making everything new. The world and all the damage that we've done to it, refreshed and rebooted and restored and perfected, not by our efforts, but by the intervention of the one who created it. I wonder what you make of that message. How does that have a bearing on climate change? A Scottish preacher called David Roberts was speaking at a church in the southern parts of the USA where he says everybody calls himself an evangelical Christian, but almost nobody can articulate what that really means. And he was invited to go and speak. And at the end, somebody quite cross came up and asked him if he was a tree-hugging communist. And he replied that he was very happy to be called a communist, but accusing him of hugging trees was going too far. But the person asking the question didn't really understand the irony and continued to debate with him. And said, look, what is the point of looking after the environment, the guy said? What's the point of it? Because it's all going to be destroyed and put right at the end anyway. And the preacher replied, well, if that is the case, I'm sure you won't mind if I come round later to your house and set it on fire and destroy your cars. I'm sure you have plenty of them. Because after all, it's all going to be destroyed and put right in the end anyway, so I might as well just do it now. Now, some of the loudest voices in the media at the moment claim to represent Christianity, but we need to recognise that we're all influenced by the culture that we come from. And those voices tend to come from a part of the world that is very invested in the oil industry, in big farming, in cattle, in burgers, in road trips, and all of those things. And the answers may not be coming so much from the Bible and from Jesus as from the culture. So the Bible actually answers that question in a very different way. The Bible raises the same point. It says, look, if the world is going to be destroyed and made new again, then how then should we live? So you can look it up later in 2 Peter chapter 3. How then should we live? And the answer is given, well, the new future, the new creation, will be the home of righteousness. So that is how you should live. Live as people who have been made ready for that new world, who've been made new people, who've been transformed and changed by being forgiven and by knowing Jesus, and who are now people who will look after this world as we were always intended to. Be like your Saviour Jesus, who said, love your neighbour as yourself. Be that kind of person if the world is going to end and be destroyed. Be the kind of person that cares about how your actions affect others, even if your actions are not going to affect you, but somebody much poorer in another part of the world. Even if your actions are not going to affect your generation, but a future generation. Love your neighbour as yourself. So why then are we failing to save the planet? Well, Greta Thunberg certainly has it at least partly right. We are failing, she says. And she uses a metaphor that is actually straight from the Bible about your house is burning. So act accordingly. And 2 Peter 3 and Jude for example, describe us as living in a house that is like that, that is on fire and doesn't have long. And we need saving. But perhaps Jesus is one of the only people who might say that those concerned about the climate have actually underestimated the problem. That it is even more serious. Why aren't we saving the planet? Because we need saving. We're part of what needs saving. Above all, it's us that needs saving. Yes, we may have a decade to change the way we look after the planet. May only have that amount of time. We have less than that, potentially. We don't know how long we have. We could have less than that to be right with God before we meet him. And we don't know when he's going to bring this world to an end. It could be less than a decade. Could be much longer. Could be much less. And so the problem is really serious. And changing our behavior is not going to save the planet. It's not going to save ourselves. We need Jesus to do that. We need his mercy. His forgiveness. We need to be changed from the inside out. We need new hearts and new attitudes and a new love for others. So yes, Christians, I think we'll want to do all that we can. We will want to recycle and conserve energy and insulate houses and plant trees and cut back on eating meat and reduce the amount of plastic that we use. But above all of that will go some way to helping, but above all, we need something much greater than that. We need Jesus himself. So let's give him our full attention. If Jesus is not yet someone who is important to you, let me encourage you to get to the bottom of what he claims and what he offers.